This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
We're about to track down Lance Ferguson. He's in an area that doesn't have fantastic reception, so we will keep our fingers and toes all crossed tonight as we introduce Lance. He's a Melbourne-based but New Zealand-born producer, songwriter, guitarist, radio broadcaster, DJ and recording artist. And he's performing in the Stonington Jazz Festival on May the 11th with his band Menagerie. He also leads Australia's soul funk band The Bamboos, releases works in the pop electronica world and broadcasts his own radio show. It's my great pleasure to bid a very warm welcome tonight, Lance Ferguson. Welcome, Lance.
Oh, hey, David, how are you going? Sorry about that. We got there in the end.
We have indeed. But you can't have bad luck with technology that doesn't always come to our help, does it?
Oh, it certainly doesn't. Although it does, I must say, in the music world, I remember back to the pre-internet days when it was very, very hard to collaborate with artists overseas. That's really one aspect of that technology that has facilitated a whole lot of creativity with artists being able to connect. So, yeah, technology, you know, we rely on it heavily.
We don't actually realise how much we rely upon it until we come across someone who's in a bad reception area. But as you say, that technology, it obviously is something that you use to collaborate with people overseas.
You mentioned my other band, The Bamboos. We kind of came up, I guess, at the turn of the millennium around that time, and it really kind of coincided with how musicians were using the connection available through the internet at that time. And so, you know, in years before that time, I wouldn't have been able to collaborate with the likes of Alice Russell, the great vocalist from UK. I might have to actually go to the UK to do that, or, you know, you would actually have to be there. And at that time, I mean, we really do take it for granted now. But at that time, that really was, it blew people's minds that you could arrange a vocal session and upload the files and add that to your track or write a piece of music internationally through email. I mean, it's just a given these days, but back then it really changed the game.
It would indeed. The time involved, let alone the expense, is just enormous.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now it's a completely different playing field, and I think it's a really exciting time to be making music.
Oh, very, very much so, particularly if you can collaborate with people all over the world, as well as your local musos as well. It gives you such an array of newness to the music.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, it's just so exciting to watch the younger generations of musicians coming up and just the whole cross-pollination of the scene and of musicians themselves. I really think the technology is open. It's so wide open that some of the music I'm hearing coming out of Australia specifically, but just Australian musicians working with other international artists, it's very cool and very exciting.
Do you have a favourite genre to work in, Lance?
Oh, see, yeah, genre is a weird one for me because I do work, you know, few different ones, I guess, and sometimes I try and avoid thinking about genre if I can, and sort of wait till the end of when a project has wrapped up, and then. Or a song, I guess, a composition or a piece or whatever I'm working on. I sort of wait till the end to find a box to put it in, but I try as much as I can, I guess, free my mind of thinking about genre too much when you're sort of walking in the door of the studio or something like that, or going to do a co-write with someone or something like that.
So the concept of saying, I'm going to write a jazz song today, can stop the ideas flowing?
Well, look, you know, the reality is sometimes that does happen because you might be finishing off a record and you've got, you know, you're kind of missing a song or two, or you know you've got to write something that fits in. So look, of course that happens, but I just think when I do have those times when I go into my studio and do have some time to just write anything, I try and put that out of my head and just come up with some music and try and, you know, yeah, as I said, put it in a box later.
What was your first recollection, or what is your first recollection of music that you really loved?
Well, if I'm honest, I would have to go back to an album by ABBA when I was about 5 years old that Mum and Dad were playing around the house, and I remember singing along to the song Mamma Mia, I believe it was. So that is my earliest recollection of being into something musical. But, you know, later on my taste changed somewhat, and I remember in high school my dad sent me a tape of the great Miles Davis album Kind of Blue, and that really you know, changed my world, and I'd never heard any music like that before. And, you know, this is when I'm maybe like 16 or something like that. And that really kind of opened my mind and ears up to a whole world of stuff that I guess I've kind of followed down the rabbit hole for the last several decades.
You've had quite a bit of a difference there between ABBA and Miles Davis, but
yes.
Either way, it's still great music. And it's the ABBA, obviously, that caught your younger attention. And I suppose I can understand that, because it is that music that just gets you up to dance and enjoy it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I come from a musical family, and my grandfather, I didn't know him that well, but he was a well-known musician in New Zealand, and put out, in fact, New Zealand's first ever LP record.
Oh, wow.
In that format in the 50s. And he was someone who, he did view music as firstly entertainment, and there's something about his ethos of that has stayed with me. I mean, I listen and enjoy a lot of music that's probably more made for artistic purposes and maybe entertainment purposes, but there's something about that mindset that I even if I'm making a record like a Menagerie record, which is you know, just at times it's some sort of pretty heavy stuff. I there's still something about it, and especially the show coming up, it has to be, I believe it still has to be entertaining for people. So I like to make music for other people. I'm not sort of sitting there really making it all for myself or for my own pleasure. In the back of my head, I'm thinking I want to connect with people, or I want other human beings to enjoy it. That's something that kind of stuck with me from him.
And ultimately, that is what music's all about. It's getting people involved and interacting with each other. I'm pleased to hear that is a message, a lesson that he has passed on to you. That's a great lesson to have.
And look, it is also subjective. And you know, there's some people who, and artists, who aren't concerned about that aspect of stuff. And that's fine too. I sort of think it's all cool. Everyone is on their own journey of making stuff, and however they manage to create stuff, it's fine. But yeah, that's just something that stuck with me, and it's always been a thing I keep in mind, is that I am trying to connect with people and you know, entertain people. It's a pretty strong word, but I've probably molded it for myself into connecting with people on some sort of emotional level. That's got to be the goal for me, I think.
When you're composing for Menagerie, what is your focus?
Well, the first record we did, which was called They Shall Inherit, that was actually a dedication to my children. So I was actually focused on, I was sort of thinking about them, and I was thinking about some music that they knew it was sort of specially dedicated to them, and in some cases songs were literally named after them. That would be something they could sort of always have in their lives, you know, when I'm long gone, not to sound too maudlin about it. I felt like it was sort of a gift of music for my children, I guess. That was the first record. But I am so fortunate and lucky to work with some of Australia's finest musicians in that band. I'm also very aware of coming up with some music that will inspire and challenge them on some level, to make sure that they're really invested in it. So it's it can be a challenge, because I'm like, what can I do that's going to kind of put the needle in these guys and girls to keep them on their toes, but also to satisfy their incredible talents and technical skill and all that sort of stuff. So there's a bit of that going on as well. I'm hoping that, you know, the wider listening public might get into it as kind of esoteric music as it is.
Trying to balance both sides of the coin, keeping your musos really interested and engaged while keeping your audience on the same track. That's a challenge indeed.
That is the trick.
Now, the Arrow of Time album, I did actually wonder when I saw the name of your first album, They Shall Inherit, whether there was something in that. Is there something in the Arrow of Time naming?
I'm a bit of a science nerd, I guess, and I'm not saying I absorb much of the information in the books I read on that subject, but I try to. And I read Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time, and I think there were a couple of pages that I actually absorbed and understood, and that was a real win for me. So I am fascinated at that area of stuff, space travel, and just what human beings are capable of, and what the future holds, and all that sort of stuff. So the Arrow of Time there are a bunch of themes and around futuristic space exploration and all that kind of cosmic stuff, which I'm fascinated by, and it's just that was something which is, I guess, maybe at odds with the whole idea of spiritual jazz. It's more like scientific jazz, maybe you would put it.
Oh, now that's an interesting way of putting it, indeed. Well, it must have something to it because it was nominated last year for the Age Music Victoria Best Jazz Album Award, and that's a good place to be at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've never received an award for any kind of music I've made, but it's lovely to for an album to get noticed and to be nominated in any of these award ceremonies. But with that record particularly, it was nice that got a little bit of a nod there because it is music that, I guess, is very close to my heart.
What can we expect to hear at Chapel Off Chapel with Menagerie? And we should ask also, who's in Menagerie?
It's an 11-piece band, so I won't go through every person. I don't want you to be on the phone for 2 hours with you. So your listeners, you might agree. There's a few key players that I'm really happy to have along. Mark Fitzgibbon, who is really one of Australia's greatest jazz musicians of all time, for my money. He's just an encyclopedia of harmony, rhythm, and melody. And he actually played on both of the albums, but he wasn't... You know, Menagerie's only performed twice. Once, and this is our second ever performance, I should say. So it's not like gigging all around the place all the time. And Mark, unfortunately, didn't make that first performance, but he is going to be there Saturday, which is going to be a real treat.
Fantastic.
Also, Phil Noy, the saxophone player, who I don't think would be a stranger to any jazz fan of Melbourne. He is a wonderful player. We've got Ross Irwin on the trumpet, who I believe this weekend has been at Generations of Jazz with James Morrison and the entire cast of Dow. Exciting stuff that goes on there. And then in the rhythm section, I need to shout out to Nick Marr and Moore, who happens to also be the engine room of a great band called The Putbacks, who are one of my favourite Melbourne bands and Australian bands indeed.
All right.
So, yeah, there are going to be 11 people on stage, and we're playing for about sort of 75 minutes, just over an hour. Pretty much be playing the entire Arrow of Time album. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It will be a huge amount of fun because there's always that extra tension of a live performance, even if it is performing something that's you can have in front of you in plastic, but a live performance just has so much extra to it.
I think it does, and I think for us it does because we don't really play live a lot because the band is so big it's really hard to get everyone together even for a rehearsal, let alone a show. So I think that's going to add a little extra kind of energy to this because it's sort of a rare treat to actually be doing it live.
Fantastic. Well, Lance, look, thank you so much for taking time out of what sounds like an extremely busy schedule. It will be great to hear Menagerie live next Saturday night as part of the Stonington Jazz Festival. For more information, the listener can go to lanceferguson.com.au for information about yourself and, of course, for the festival, stoningtonjazz.com.au. Lance, thank you once again for taking the time out to speak to us tonight.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me along.
You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.